Our next presenter is Jacob Kinsey, and for the last 9 years, Jacob has been the Central U.S. Sales Manager for Cobalt Digital, provider of video and audio infrastructure for the live television broadcast market. I've had the pleasure of knowing Cobalt since 2000 when I was working at WILL in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. And I've known Jacob since he first joined Cobalt, so it's been a long relationship and a pleasure. In recent years, Cobalt has been actively engaged in providing production tools in SDI and IP environments for companies looking to monetize content using online portals. Jacob has been on the front lines working to automate the creation of digital assets for distribution across multiple platforms. Welcome, Jacob.
Thank you very much for that introduction, and thank you for the Wisconsin Broadcast Clinic for your show and having me up and speaking. I appreciate it. I'd also like to give a thank you to Dr. Ciro Naranja, who actually authored the white paper based on the presentation that you're going to see today. So imagine a world where you have content that you can give to your viewers that is directly applicable to them, that knows what they want to see, and your customers can actually have a portal that drives straight to their website and purchase directly from your content. Not only that, imagine that you can show your customer just how successful you've been with their advertising, how many dollars that you've sold based upon their advertising. That would be incredibly valuable, I believe. So that's going to be kind of the basis of the conversation that we're having today. Is that possible? Can you get there? You know, in digital, a lot of people see that now. They see the metrics, and you can actually quantify how effective an advertisement is. And that's something that we can do here in broadcasting. I think that's something that's very exciting. So just to give you a brief outline of what we're going to do today, we're going to review kind of with the traditional system of SCOTY insertion, because that's something that I'm sure many of you are very familiar with and we've been using for many years. How the differences are in ad insertion, especially with OTT or over the top, basically delivering the content via internet. Other uses of this infrastructure in the industry, you know, what else can we do with it? And then lastly, just a note on frame accuracy. So general ad insertion, you know, this is something that we've been around for a long time. We start with the video feed containing the programs and the advertisements. And then some of the ads can be replaced, or interstitials can be replaced. So this is done oftentimes by an automation system that decorates the programming. Video feed with markers that show when the commercial or ads are. So an encoder then converts this baseband video to a compressed signal, and the markers are also carried along into the compressed system. So somewhere in the chain then, down the line, these new ads are spliced in, and it would look something like this. So in this diagram, we show the SDI feed coming in, an inserter inserting the 104 messaging, the SCOTY 104 messaging, based on commands from an automation system. This is all standardized on SMPTE 2021 or SCTE 118 describes what that automation process is like. And then that SDI feed can then go to a MPEG-4 or OTT encoder, which is then translated to SCOTY 35, which is basically the SCOTY 104 marker for the compressed domain. So at this point, for many of you, this is going to be the end result to have your decorated transport stream that has these SCOTY messages in it that you then send off somewhere else to do the transmission. So the automation or the back office system decides where the markers go, And then, as we said, that's shown by Scotty 118 to be used to communicate that. The transport stream is transmitted to a device where the splicing happens. And so this could be satellite transmission to affiliates, Fox, for example, or IP transition to a CDN. And those things are then further on processed down the line. So this is kind of the traditional workflow. And from after it gets transmitted out of your facilities or out of the network facilities, wherever it might be, that comes into the splicer. An ad server serves up the ads. And this used this SCOTY 30 protocol to do that communication back and forth between the ad server and whatever the splicer might be. So these are things that are happening today, without much ingenuity. As we said, the stream's decorated with the 35 markers, and it uses SCOTY 30 to deliver these ads. And then the splicer will generate a compliance stream with the new embedded ads. So one of the neat things that you can do with this traditional model as well is you can have in the transport stream multiple programs and then have a limited amount of ad insertion with these traditional models given the SCOTY 138 protocol. So that's something that, that again, is available right now. So then we kind of look in to say, well, okay, so now we're talking about OTT, and what's the difference? We have this model where we insert the SCOTY commands, and then we transmit it, and we have a splicer controlled by the SCOTY 130 protocol. So what's different now? So OTT is unicast, and what that means is that you can send programs directly to a client without having to broadcast to everybody. So you can have these content individualized programming to each one of your viewers. And it also uses short fragments that are individually decodable. And this is going to help us jump to different profiles so that we can look at different ads or things down the line. So this is a simple illustration. So in this transcoder, we have different profiles that's being generated by the transcoder here. Those profiles could be different bit rates, anything of that nature. And then each of those profiles will also have a manifest. And the manifest is kind of like a playlist. And it'll tell you, play this file, and another file. And that's the general outline of an OTT, maybe something like HLS, or something of that nature. And that's delivered over the internet then directly to your client for playback. So embedding these SCOTY 35 triggers in OTT can work the same way as in the traditional broadcast. The basic idea here is to make sure that you start a new segment at the frame signaled by the trigger. And then you can actually terminate that segment early in order to be frame accurate and playing out the next clip. So this is all detailed by SCOTY 67 for HLS, and then there's also MPEG-DASH and HDS. And DASH is implemented by SCOTY 214. So to kind of provide you a little bit of a roadmap of how that's done. So before, when I was describing to you the different packets, so the vertical lines here are different profiles, as you can see, at different bit rates, 6 megabits, 4 megabits, 2 megabits. And generally, as a content is being played and you have a varying internet connection, you can jump from one profile to the next profile in order to have a streamless viewing experience. But we can, and each one of these segments are 2 to 10 seconds or so, so they're consistent in what they are. But what you can do in the transcoder is actually shorten what we call here a group of pictures, or the GOP, to align directly with your switching point. So when you put in a SCOTY trigger in your facility and say, we're going to switch at this point, it actually gives you a timestamp where you can insert directly at the exact switch point. So we can switch over from content to an advertisement very easily using this method. So the packetized nature of this actually works in our benefit. So for the HLS, they take the SCSI 35 commands and they translate it into text using the base 64 encooding. HDS is similar. MPEG-DASH uses an XML in order to author the manifest. But both of these are possible. So then we get into something called ESAM, or Event Singling and Management API. So this is a way for the information to come in and talk to the transcoder, segment packeter, control element. And you can have queuing in the condition the signal, or you can also condition the manifest. And it's a bidirectional communication to be able to do that. So in a diagram here, you see that the SCSI 35 information is coming in, and the transcoder is actually communicating with the signal processing system, or what we call the POIS, the Placement Opportunity Information System. And this system will then communicate back to the transcoder and condition the signal. As well, there's a fragmenter, and the fragmenter and the transcoder could be in the same technology, but they perform different tasks here. This one, you actually have conditioning of the manifest folder rather than the signal. And then that can go out to air. So then you have these two different, you might have heard of client-side ad insertion and server-side ad insertion. So for client-side ad insertion, the client processes the manifest, learns of the ad insertion opportunity. The client reaches out to the server and gets the ad to play. So there's some benefits and some drawbacks to that. You know, we have ad blocking technology today. So you might see an ad play for on one of the network stations, and oftentimes you can download free ad blockers that'll just pull out those events because the client or the computer knows when those are coming up. So then there's this other methodology called server-side ad insertion. And for server-side ad insertion, a server is manipulating that manifest folder rather than the client. And so it's completely seamless to the client of when the ad is being inserted. So the client just goes on playing. There's no hit to the rebuffering for the signal, and you don't have to worry as much about the ad blocking. So both of these ways support these personalized ad insertions, but they're just handled a little bit differently. So where do the ads come from? The traditional delivery model, the splicer uses SCTE30 like we've covered. But then there's also something, the IAB, which is the Interactive Advertising Bureau. And you might have heard of VAST, or Video Ad Serving Template. And so this is something that's used generally when you have a third party controlling these softwares. SCSI 130, which is kind of the all the other protocols that I've been talking about today, is a set of protocols that are used generally when you own that infrastructure. So VAST is a layer on top of the browser technology. We'll go into that in a little bit more detail here. So basically with VAST, you have a request. This is a client-side ad server. So you have a request from the client to say, hey, I need an advertisement. The server says, you can play this ad here, or it tells you to go to a different server to request an ad. And because of the manifest folder, that makes it really easy to just change at that switch point we were talking about earlier and do that frame accurately to pull out those ads from different places. So it makes a playlist in the cloud really, really simple there. And then you can use the basic ad tracking cookies. So what I was talking about in the beginning of being able to come and get that information, same as other digital advertisers, to look at who saw my ads and did they click on a certain link to purchase a product. The same type of cookies that are available in digital are also available to broadcasters through this method. So then this is the server side, and it's a little bit different in that instead of the client making the request of saying, hey, I need an ad to the ad server, now it's this server in the cloud saying, I need to have that ad. So then, so the app makes the VAST request, and the VAST comes back and says to the manifest folder, you know, look for the ad in this other server. And so that has one. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Is this better? Thank you. And so that that has one drawback now. Every request looks like it's coming from the server, where before it came from the client. And so there are protocols in place for the client to give back information to the server and the ability for the server to then report that back of what kind of client data you have from the individual client. So then there's something with interactive ads, and that might be the, you know, you click on this link here, and excellent, thank you. You click on this link here, and you can, you know, go to the site and buy the item. It could also be something like a survey or some kind of interaction that you have with the content. And so this is another exciting portion, and that's called VPaid. And VPaid is a layer on top of VAST, and there are these executable apps. So you might hear that terminology a lot, too, is video player ad interface definition. So then SCOTY 130, again, in contrast to VAST, it defines logical functions for managing these advertising systems. And these next list of definitions are kind of important to understanding the whole ecosystem. So you have ad management services, or ADM. Ad decision services, or ADS, and then this overarching general information services, which has several different subsections of content information services, placement opportunity information services, or POIS, and ESOM, which we talked about earlier, is actually a POIS, and subcarrier information services, or SIS. So this diagram here kind of shows a basic overview of the SCOTY 130 diagram. The SIS, that's the portion that connects the asset media or asset metadata and availability. It applies to ads or non-ads. And then the POIS is the information about the how you're going to insert the metadata and things of that nature. And then the SIS, the subscriber information, and things of that nature. So the way that this works is that the ADM takes that information and shows where the placement opportunity should be, and then the ADS decides which ad you should play. So that's the way you target specific ad depending on what information you're getting back from the client to that individual. So this is then taking a step back and doing a really high-level overview. So you have your decorated SCOTY insertion points coming into the transcoder. And we talked about the POIS or ESOM that communicates that to the transcoder. And then you go to the ADM, which decides which ads to play and how it's going to play that. And then it goes on to the customer. So if you look up the SCOTY 130 and you go to the diagram, you'll actually see this big workflow. And this is basically what we just went through, is every portion of this diagram is represented by the different standards here. So this is something that you can look up, and if you have more interest, read about more in detail later. But every presentation on this topic needs to show this slide. So what else can we do? So besides commercial ad insertion, like what does it matter? What does decorating SCOTY or SDI with SCOTY mean? So these descriptor events can do a lot of different things. First of all, when you decorate the ad insertion, you actually say how long of that commercial segment is. So you say we have to insert it at this point in time, and it's going to last 30 seconds or 45 seconds. And that'll help determine what kind of commercial spot you want to put in that area. So you're also able to do things like insert user rights management. So if you don't have the rights to play out certain content on a certain feed on the internet, it'll allow you to replace that feed with other content. It could also control DVRs downstream. So if you wanted to make sure that your DVR played at a certain time because the baseball game went long and you don't want to, you know, record a little bit of the baseball game and then the next program after, this will help to kind of show when what to do with that DVR downstream. So you can use it for other applications like MLB if you wanted to do stats or pretty much any type of information that you wanted to include with your broadcast to help elevate the user experience. Scotty insertion is absolutely a way to go. So frame accuracy, it's something that is available today. It's in the Scotty 35104 spec, actually gives you a timestamp of where the switch event occurred. And then there's a pre-roll that you can have to tell the to tell the downstream equipment when this is coming to happen. So what we do is for Cobalt is we read that in advance and insert that metadata frame accurately, so you don't have a few seconds before or after where you're worried about having content where maybe you don't have the rights to it, or it's just kind of annoying to miss the first few seconds of a program. Maybe you missed something important. So I went a bit quick here, but basically, I think the takeaway is that the holy grail of broadcast, being able to give these targeted advertisements to your clients and talk to your salespeople about how they could better get revenues from that content is available today with technologies that we have today. And I'm sure you're going to start seeing a lot more of this as we go on in the future of, if you have questions about how to do these insertions or what technology is available, Cobalt and myself will definitely be happy to help navigate this for you guys. So with that, I'll open up to questions and try to see if I can't answer anything else that you guys have. Maybe you guys missed the first part.
We kind of live in the very early stages of your presentation where all of this these triggers get inserted. Mm-hmm. And so you say that automation should insert the Scotty 104. And then I assume the transformation from Scotty 104 to 35 is done inside of the encoder automatically in the station. So how does 104 get inserted? Is there some kind of pass-through box that the automation triggers, or how does that originate? Or can it be actually embedded in the content if you know that you have this ad that needs to be replaced every day with a different one downstream?
Yeah, let me go back a few slides here. I actually have a representation of that in the very beginning. So there's an inserter generally that has an SDI in and an SDI out and is connected via Ethernet to the automation system, some kind of back and forth control from automation to the inserter. And so what you need to do, and the tricky thing is to have not through a GPI, because a lot of times an automation system might have a GPI contact closure that triggers these events. But the problem with the GPI is that you have a single event, and you might have maybe four or five GPIs from the automation system to your inserter. And if you wanted to insert some information like this commercial is 30 seconds long or 45 seconds long, or maybe it's 31 seconds long, that's hard to do with GPI infrastructure. And so what you really need is some kind of Ethernet control from your automation system to the inserter technology in order to tell it exactly where that frame accurate message should be. So this is the diagram that I was talking about before. So you have, let me get out my pointer here. So in this diagram, you see we have the automation system, and then that automation system understands where these switch points are, and it communicates, that's this solid line here, to the inserter box that's taking in your SDI feed. And then you come out SDI with these 104 triggers. And why that's important is you can repurpose or store that content now with the 104 triggers and repurpose it down the line. So maybe you aren't using any type of triggering downstream currently today, but if you can save this SDI feed with the 104 triggers, at least then you have that marked so that you can use that in the future. So then after it's saved in the SDI stream, it goes to an encoder, and this is generally an MPEG-4 encoder. It could be outputting HLS, for example, with multiple profiles, and that's when it gets translated to the SCSI 35. And it's also possible for the automation system to talk directly to the encoder so that you bypass this inserter in the SDI and you have only the SCSI 35 triggers in the compressed domain. You lose the ability to save the SDI 104 triggers. So that's generally why people would want to insert in the SDI in 104 and then translate it to 35 when they do the encode. But yeah, this is, I mean, this slide here, for most of you, like, it's nice to know about all the different parts of SCSI 130 and VAST, but this is going to be what 90% of broadcasters will probably worry about in the next few years, is just making sure that the automation system talks to the inserter and the inserter is inserting the information at the right time. Any other questions?
Has anyone thought about inserting different news stories for different segments of the population? And will I still have a family and community when that's done?
Yeah, so, I mean, we already get today targeted advertisements. You know, you go on to social media or, you know, many websites, and you're blasted with all the different ads of the thing that you just looked up. And so I think that the industry is moving in that way. You get people that want to know, you know, how effective their advertisements are. So I think that in order for broadcasters to be relevant, stay relevant, you know, they need to give that type of metrics to their customers. So whether, you know, we like it or not, I think that targeted advertisement is something that that the industry will get behind. And as we even think about IP, you know, how is IP revolutionizing our industry? And as Tom said, you know, this is right now, this IP transition is kind of transparent to the end user, but this is a way where we can use over-the-top transmission to our customers to actually gain more revenue. So it's a very, very easy way to see, hey, this is a way we can use the internet today to gain more value.
And forgive me, to clarify a little bit more on what the question that Chuck asked, with the diagram that you have there, the automation system talking to the inserter, is that more or less watermarking the SDI feed to show the points where ads can be inserted, or is the inserter doing the ad insertion?
Good question. It's like the SCSI information is a mark in the ancillary data of the video. And so it doesn't actually do the insertion. When you come out, you're still coming out with the same interstitials. But it just gives a marker, like a cue, like a watered mark, but it's in the ancillary data. So that then can play through to the end user, or something downstream can read those markers.
So if we have another encoder that's set up to actually do the over-the-top insertion, it can take this watermarked information, do that insertion before it leaves the station.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Okay, on STC E35, the only thing I'm familiar with it is relay outs of satellite receivers. Is there more data in it than they give us?
Yeah, so it's actually a really dynamic protocol that you're able to do a lot more than just say start, stop, short, stop, short, short,
yeah,
stop.
Yeah, the receivers just come with a relay, you know, start a break, end a break. Mm-hmm. Relays and
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, in the broadcast facility, we're getting it. You know, with the dot twos, dot threes, whatever. We got to get you know, break starts and stuff plus an ID thing, and it's kind of hard to. They're not giving us multiples.
Right.
On that.
Right. Yeah, the way it's being used right now is pretty simplistic for what it's capable of. You're basically able to insert any type of information that you want with these markers, more than just the four that we already know. So if you're traditionally used to just doing these four markers, you can easily trigger with a GPIO. But now you're able to actually look at the exact timestamp of where to insert. So instead of doing a start and stop marker, you just do a single marker with how long the avail is supposed to go on for. And that'll give you a lot more, that'll tell the insertion devices downstream exactly what size of ad to place in to that spot. Where if you just have a start command and a stop command, you know, it's not as easy for the system downstream that's doing the ad replacement to know what size commercial to put in. So it is a little bit different than the traditional model.
Do the SCUDI markers survive all the way through the cable distribution system to the viewer's receiver?
That's a good question. I mean, sometimes closed captions don't survive to the end. So becoming an ancillary data, I mean, anytime you run that through a scalar device, it strips all ancillary data. So you'll want something that'll be able to bridge that ancillary data from whatever kind of manipulation, if you're doing a downscale to standard definition from your high definition video signal. You'll want to be able to preserve that data going forward. It's not quite like a Nielsen watermark, where anytime you do a processing to the audio, you're going to lose that Nielsen watermark. You know, this is more like captioning data, if you would, living in the ancillary space. But yeah, so I encourage you guys to look into this further. I think it some great ways to monetize and to give a value add to our current product that we have in the industry right now, and we can do this with technologies that we have today. So that's the exciting portion. Thank you.
So someday we'll be watching a Packers-Bears football game, and the Wisconsin fans will see a Packer touchdown, and the Illinois fans will see a Bears touchdown. Only the Illinois fans have to go back to the Walter Payton days to find a touchdown to put in there. Sorry.